Dirt and the Earth by Jane Ink from Toronto. Thank you for listening to Deliberate Noise today. Tune in again next Monday at 5 for more Deliberate Noise. New episodes every 2 weeks, and you can always listen to past episodes or look up my playlists. Just go to citr.ca and search for Deliberate Noise. Stay tuned for Exploding Head Movies at 7 p.m. to hear what GAC has to offer you this week from movie and TV soundtracks. And keep the dial on 101.9 whenever you want to hear local, independent, volunteer-driven radio. I'm grateful for the time I spent with you today. Thank you. And I will end with a track by Mama Larky. This is a new one. It's called Meadow. I don't know if there's a much better place than this that I've ever found. Bringing my wrists and closing my lips like this. Making it sucks. Closing time brings melodies like this. Don't care how I look. Reflection only in moderation hits. I know that there's still novels to be found.
Northern Lights have been like so amazing because it's been super clear. And so me and my friends were like, oh, we're gonna stay up. And we're like, okay, we gotta stay up because if we're gonna stay up until like midnight, we gotta do something.
Hell
so
yeah.
we went through the McDonald's drive-through, and my friend was like, I'm so tired, what time is it? And I was like, I don't know, it's probably like 6. It was 8:45 at night.
There you go. There you
I was
go.
Like, never mind, it's almost 9 o'clock, but it looks the same as 6:45.
Of course. Now I can only imagine. Is this also too? So have you been to Alaska before going in January?
Nope.
Oh, that's a switch. Well, also too then, have you seen Northern Lights before you went up there?
No, I'm like I said, I'm from Southern California. There was like nothing like this up there, yeah.
That's super sick then, being able to go up and having it be a semi-consistent thing right now at the least. Like, what do you do on your weekends? Well, There's one of the coolest phenomenons on Earth happening. We can go check it out.
On my 21st birthday back in February, my friends called me at like 12:45 in the morning. They're like, yo, come down to the dock and the Northern Lights are out. And I was like, cool, see you in a minute. Like a 1 minute walk. And I have to like take a step back and I'm like, I live where people only dream of vacationing or coming to see these things. And it's like,
yeah. Well, it's hard to put that into perspective too, especially when it is easier to see the Northern Lights, like you said, that 1 minute walk than it is for, like, it's as easy to do that as it is for most people to go like get a bag of Doritos. Yeah. Like, it's the same, like, it's the same amount of trip, it's the same amount of energy, which is absurd, but that's super sick.
Yeah.
When you said you were a wildlife photographer, so I'm not sure, are you doing anything else in Alaska with wildlife photography, or is that just in Southern California?
At this point, no, because whale watching is seasonal up here, because up until a week ago, we were in a 4-month-long blizzard, basically. So it's so not fun. Ideal. I would go whale watching in that circumstance, but not everyone wants to. And I planned on staying up here in the summer to be a wildlife photographer on a whale watching boat.
Definitely.
But Canada extended their cruise ship ban, and mm-hmm. Canada is a major port to stop in on the way up to Alaska on cruises. Gotcha. So you can't stop in Canada. You can't go up to Alaska. So I had a couple jobs lined up, and then they basically fired me before I even started. But my wildlife photography, I worked part-time there when I lived down in California, but now cool. It's just whenever I'm home for spring and summer break.
That's super nice. What's the place that you work with down there?
So I work for Newport Coastal Adventure. It's I don't want to say small business because it's very well known, but it's compared to every other whale watching company down there. It's relatively small. It's owned by one guy. It's owned by my boss. And we do little Zodiac boats. So I think it's a lot more cooler than the big, like bigger vessels, because Definitely. You're going like 35 miles an hour and you can cover a lot more ground that way, or a lot more water that way.
No, more than fair. More than fair. When you're going, what do you think is the hardest thing in terms of like actually doing the photography on the water and getting the right shots? Because that's one thing that when I look at it, like I've tried with my phone before, and it only works so well in terms of like timing and like getting all the aspects together is not easy.
It's not. And pretty much it depends on the condition, because since our boat is so small, there's days where I've walked off my boat like totally drenched. So some days like I won't even bring out my camera because my expensive lens and my expensive camera is not going to be ruined. But it's working on a small boat. A lot of the time I'm on my knees getting at water level. So there have been days where over the summer, I'll walk off the boat with like bloody kneecaps. But
oh shit,
it's really fun though. And I used my phone a little bit for like video, but
yeah.
You can't, like, it doesn't even compare to using like a really big camera. And when I eventually saved up my money for it, there's so much that goes into getting one shot, because there will be some days where I work 13 plus hours and I'm like, all right, I have two shots that I post on my Instagram. Because with dolphins are a little bit more predictable, and they're usually in bigger numbers. So there's at least one dolphin doing something cool. But when you're watching humpbacks and it breaches and you miss it, you're like,
that's it.
I'm screwed for the whole day. So the settings on your camera can pretty much stay the same unless there's like a huge lighting change.
Yeah.
It's all about like positioning. And there are some days where it's just so rough and so horrible, I don't even take my camera out. It just stays on in my case.
No, that's super fair. And this is another thing too, that I keep on telling people when they go for whale watches and things like that, and they're thinking about like taking the pictures. Like, cause I know on some of the bigger boats as well, they'll have people that are like designated, like you are a photographer, you're going to go out every day and take photos to make sure that you can get it. But it's like the amount of chance that goes into any one is kind of absurd. Exactly like you were saying before, which I've always like, I don't think everybody fully understands that. Even if you're on the water 24/7 all the time, you'll have a couple.
Yeah. My friend, she's been doing it longer than I have. She also works for Newport Coastal. She tells me there will be weeks where she like doesn't even take out her camera and she has to like dig in her archives to find something to post.
That's fair. Speaking of posting, which platform did you start on? Because I know you have TikTok. I'm pretty sure you have Instagram and then YouTube as well. But you've been doing it for a while.
I started my Instagram. My Instagram, aside from my photography one, is more just like a personal one. Like I'll post like everyday things I do.
Yeah.
But I started to like kind of incorporate more marine biology stuff in as well, and marine photography. But
nice.
I started YouTube I did like makeup videos like way back. And I uploaded a video. It was 10 things you should know before majoring in marine biology, mm-hmm. back December of 2019. And I think it has like almost 50,000 views.
So oh, I was like, I checked, yeah.
I was like, this is what the people want to see. And over quarantine, I started posting like more like ocean videos and more marine biology and whale watching.
Yeah.
So I've been doing YouTube for marine biology a little over a year. And then I just cool. started TikTok, probably like consecutively posting, probably like, oh gosh, January, 4 months ago.
Yeah, no, same. That was exactly when I first got into it too. Jay, like it was just far enough into quarantine where it's just like, okay, fine, we're gonna do it. We're gonna try it.
Yes.
So that's super interesting though. The YouTube though, it's been up for a good while. For that, do you use the same camera that you use when you go out on the whale watch and stuff like that? Because the quality is super solid.
No, I have a smaller one. It's a Canon M50. So nice. that's what a lot of different YouTubers use. Like when you see like the family vlogging channels, that's what they use, because I'm too lazy to change my lens. I have a 100 to 400 lens. So it's like pretty large. Decently sized. Yeah. And I'm too lazy to change that out. So I was like, I'd rather just buy a separate camera.
No, that's more than fair. And we were talking literally right before this, we were talking about like how long it takes. You didn't realize how long it takes to like set stuff up or otherwise. What do you think with YouTube is the biggest thing that you like thought took not a lot of time, but ended up taking up more time than you could have imagined?
Number one, planning a video, because there are some videos where I just have so much information that I have to write it down.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be sitting here like reading a script on my YouTube. So I have to like memorize things. And because I know my stuff when it comes to like killer whales and stuff.
Of course.
Other whales, I don't know everything about them. So I have to like read it. And then I'm like, no, I have to memorize it for my video. So I'm not looking like a robot reading a script.
Of course.
Editing, I'm a perfectionist. Like if there's one thing wrong, even when I'm editing pictures, if one thing doesn't look right, I will scratch the whole thing and like start all over. And just the surroundings, especially living in college now, because I can't tell my roommate, hey, can you please shut up? I can film this video. But at home, my brother moved out. He's in the military. My mom's a nurse. Gotcha. So he's never home. So I'm like, I have my peace. But
there you go.
It's so hard to just get the perfect video filmed because something goes wrong or you can hear things in the background. And I never imagined it being such hard work. I always thought it was just like, hey guys, like today I'm doing this, but it's not. It goes so far more into that.
Yeah. There's one, I think the phrase that I hear that I sincerely believe fits with everything video writing or otherwise, if it's easy to consume, there's hours of work into it.
Oh yeah. Sure.
Like if you're watching it, you're like, this is awesome, this is so seamless, it's like that wasn't originally,
like that seamlessness right there took 100 different takes.
Took 100 different takes and then like a couple hours of sitting down and trying to figure out which ones worked.
Yes. And then editing is a whole different story, because then you have to find background music and then you have to do titles. And if you want pictures in it, because there are some videos where I am like, there's pictures everywhere. And then there's other videos where there's absolutely nothing. And I'm like, we're just going to upload it. It's fine. I don't think we're gonna care that much.
It'll be good. Well, because I'm just getting into this realm of, I'll call it YouTube more than anything else. Like TikTok, I'm just starting, but even with TikTok, like captions, like there's the one app Threads where they will caption videos, but it'll only be for 15 seconds. So you need to split it up into 15 seconds and then do it and then put it onto TikTok. And I look at that and I'm like, that's too much work. It's like very simply. Sometimes I'll type them out, but there are certain ones that I'll make and I'm like, I don't care if it's seen by however many people, it will be fine for now. If somebody really wants to know the information, I'll type it out for them. But for the straight up information, it's just like, it's not worth it. That's also one of my favorite things about the podcast too, is because my goal with it is to like record it continuously. Like the things that I post, I want them to be the full hour, like straight through. I'm not going to go through and like chop it up. One, for like, let's say authenticity's sake, but two, because I don't want to.
It's long. It's so long. I just filmed Sunday what we're doing now, but with a commercial fisherman. And yeah. when we went back and rewatched it, we were like, oh, we should probably cut that out because it could be interpreted the wrong way. So I'm sitting there. My computer is like gonna burst into flames because how much it has to work right now.
Definitely.
So I'm sitting there like watching almost a 2 hour long video, and I'm like, I don't want to hear myself talk anymore. I'm so tired of it.
No, that's more than fair. That's more than fair. I think that's also one of the things too, when I've started to like really get myself down, because I want to talk about everything on this podcast. I want to talk about captures, Free Willy, the people that are working on whale watch boats, the people that are like doing the whale watching sites all up and down the coast, the people that are doing research in remote places of the world. There's a Sri Lankan orca project. I'm like, that would be cool. but because there are so many like topics that are hot and could be misinterpreted, it's almost like a reset. Like I keep on telling myself, like, all right, sit down, take 2 seconds, think through what you're trying to say, and then go from there. And it changes the cadence and the way that like I want to say that I attack some of the questions too.
Definitely does. Yeah. Like when me and my friend were talking about the fishing industry, her parents are super involved in it. And so she said a couple things and she's like, oh crap, like, can we cut that out? Because if someone takes it the wrong way, then people are freaking crazy. They're gonna like try and find these people and like attack them on the internet. And it's just, it was a lot of work to edit all that out.
Yeah, more than fair, more than fair. And that's the thing that I found too, especially like I haven't seen anything on YouTube yet because my YouTube isn't like large at all. But TikTok, there's a couple of videos that I've posted where it's not the comments that will get me, because I usually, for some of them, I posted one video a while back that was like, it's like, we should free all the killer whales. And basically my whole thing is like, where are you going to put them? Where are they going to go? Who's going to pay for it? And a lot of people will duet and not like give answers. They'll just be mad. I'm like, don't get me wrong. It's not ideal. It's like, I don't agree with orcas in captivity, but I'd agree that the orcas should be in the best place that they should be. And like physically possible, but the responses are so visceral that it's not to the point. It's just like, oh no, I have a lot of energy and thought about this particular point. Like the tanks are smaller than the parking lot. Yeah. To run a tank that would be the size of a parking lot, be a lot of, a lot of money and a lot of like resources to do. It's funny to watch people go off, to say the least.
My friend actually sent me that TikTok of yours talking about where are you going to put them to me this morning, because I was FaceTiming her last night. She's like, what are you doing tomorrow? And I was like, oh, I'm filming this podcast with my friend and then I have schoolwork. And then she sent me that this morning and I was like, that's the guy who I'm filming the podcast with. And she has sent me like almost every one of your videos, and I had to tell her, I was like, dude, I follow him. I really appreciate you like sending them to me, but I follow him and you don't need that.
That's so cool. I can imagine you will do this with your YouTube and TikTok as well. It's like, you can't conceptualize how many people are actually interacting with your stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's super cool to hear. And I'm so glad that it, like, it's one being shared, but two, it's like being enjoyed.
I've had a lot of people message me on my personal Instagram saying like, hey, I watched your videos. Like, I really want to do marine biology. Like you inspired me to like actually pursue it. Cause not a lot of people want to pursue marine biology because quote unquote, there's no jobs and you don't make any money.
Of course.
And I'm like, no, like that's not true. And I've gotten so many DMs, and then some of them I'm like, I really don't want to sit here and type all this out. But then other ones I'm like, you took the effort to message me. I'll message you back. And I go through like all of them at one point and like message them for like hours and hours straight. But it's very humbling to know that people actually enjoy my stuff and it's not just like out there to no one to watch.
Well, of course. Well, because the numbers can be easily deceiving. And it's this thing when you talk about like people in government, they look like we're just numbers to them. It's like, because you're like, it's hard to conceptualize people in general. But speaking of going through DMs and answering them, because I've only had a couple so far, but there are certain ones that I'll answer and certain ones that I won't. Is there like a magic formula that you'll go through and you're like, oh, like you, I can see that you're decent, and so like I can respond or something like that?
Well, I don't get enough DMs on my Instagram to, like, most of them are always super nice. So I always,
oh, that's good.
I always answer them, but it's more my comment section on YouTube. I have gotten into, like, full on arguments with people because, especially on my video about Seaspiracy that I uploaded a couple weeks ago.
Gotcha.
Because with films such as Blackfish and Seaspiracy, people watch them. And then if someone disagrees with the film, they're like, no, you have to watch this video because you're wrong. So this guy was like, oh, well, everyone should be vegan and blah, 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 blah. And I told him, I was like, well, that's not possible for everyone. And I'm not sure if Kendra have touched on this with you, but on Twitter, there was a fake NGO that was going around saying that indigenous seal hunting and whaling is barbaric and we should totally stop it.
Yeah.
And there were so many people coming after me in my Twitter DMs saying like, well, it's still an animal and blah, 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 blah. And living up in Alaska for the last couple of months has given me like a new view on it, because at first I thought, I was like, well, why do they still do it? Like, that's pretty outdated.
Yeah.
But learning about it, my mindset just like totally changed. And I think people just don't know about it and they refuse to like learn about it. So those DMs, I'll be like, I'm not even gonna respond to you. You don't deserve
Fair.
You don't deserve the time of day.
Well, you don't deserve the time of day because you're not going to give it to me or the people that are doing it. You're going to have your opinion and you're going to keep it. If you want to have a conversation, I'll have a conversation. And that's another thing too. When I, the message or the TikTok that you got sent earlier, the one's like, where are you going to put them? I don't touch those comments.
I wouldn't either.
My goal with that video is like, I want people to, if three people see that and have seen, and like have gone out and said, we should free all the killer whales. I want them to be free. And then they stop for a second and think like, okay, where do they go? Like, that's what I wanted with that video. And so anybody that's going on and arguing, I'm like, the TikTok comments is not the place to duke it out.
Yeah, it's, you like, can do it separately on your own time.
You do it separately on your own time. If you want to call me, you can find my stuff. Like, I have an email that's readily available, and I'm willing to have a conversation. But it's the one thing. It's like, some people just don't want to do that. They're like, it's just a instinct reaction. It's like, oh no, this is what I want to do. It'll be fine.
And that's the problem with, I'm going to use Blackfish because I'm super informed about captivity. I grew up going to SeaWorld. I could still tell you which orca was which and where they were born and everything like that.
Of course. So
with Blackfish, people are watching it, and Blackfish was meant to tug on your heartstrings. There was very true things in that film, but it just scratched the surface. There's so much beneath it. And these people would watch this film and they're like, all right, this is all, I know everything about killer whale captivity. And they wouldn't listen to SeaWorld's point of view. They wouldn't listen to anybody else's point of view, because like you said, they're going to say release the whales, but they're not going to be like, where the hell are we going to put them? Because they're all, they simply cannot survive just by themselves out in the ocean at this point.
Yeah. It's people that want to care just enough to have their voice heard. And which is usually the loudest too. It's like, I think they should be freed. Like, well, think about it for 5 seconds, like 5 seconds. And this is another thing too, is like when people ever say like, oh, I know things. I'm like, okay, like explain them to me. And that's the thing too. It's like, oh, they're sea pens. I'm like, where? And people will have these ideas that a lot of these places exist when they're still in the process of being built, and you can support them. Surprisingly, if anybody hasn't, go check out the Whale Sanctuary Project. Lori Mutarino is doing great work. And that whole team. So it's just a wild ride.
And when people say, oh, just free them, just put them back in the ocean.
Of course.
I look at them and I'm like, okay, how about you go live in the mountains with no help, no resources, no nothing, and see how long you survive.
Yeah. Well, and also too, like more than that, there was somebody that was telling me earlier, it's like, they'll get reintroduced to their pod. I'm like, number one, that's happened once. Number two, here's the thing about a lot of the whales that have gone in from Southern Resident or other wild communities. And this is a thing that I actually thought about for a second. I'm like, whether or not they could be reintroduced isn't the problem. There's also a fact that the mothers have babies, and the all of the hunting techniques need to be learned. All of the vocalizations need to be learned. And you can't have a mother and a child learning that at the same time, especially in a matrilineal or like social group. Like that itself has to be like insane.
I would love for it to be a perfect world and Lolita could be released back into her pod and Katina could, and every one of these whales could meet their pod again. But it's just not, I don't think it would ever work because they have lived in fake or synthetic pods for so long. And you have to think like, let's see, like Makani, he is Argentinian and Icelandic. So okay. I believe, yes. So which one are you gonna go with? Because if he goes into Iceland, there's a whole other part that won't make sense. And if you go to Argentina, there's a whole other part that won't make sense because they have made so many hybrids that they have no choice but to just put them in one singular fake pod at this point.
Well, and that's also the weirdest thing about this that a lot of people don't understand is that like all orcas aren't the same.
Yes, thank you.
Like, It's a sincere thing. So for anybody that doesn't know, and we can even do this as a little introduction, there's like taxonomy, right? So we're Homo sapiens. Orcinus orca is the name of this, like the genus and the species of killer whales, orcas, whatever have you. But the funny part is that once you get into orcas, there's another taxonomy. There's ecotypes. And then under that, there's pods. And then under that, there's matrilines. Matrilines are family groups, so it's a little bit shorter. Pods happen within different ecotypes, and there are different ecotypes in every ocean in the world. Literally.
Well, just look
literally at every ocean.
Just look at the southern residents. Like, you have the southern residents, but are you talking about K-pod, L-pod, or J-pod?
Yes, precisely. Precisely. No, it's fantastic. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people haven't dove into, but I think would be really it's a relatively easy concept to grasp, and I think putting it in front of them properly, because in order to learn this, it's usually you have to like do a little bit of a dive, not too much, just a little. You need to read like one book fully or like something to that effect to really try to like get where the setup of it, but it's worthwhile and it changes your thought process about a lot of this stuff.
It does. Like, I remember ordering one book after reading Blackfish, and now I have spent too much money that I care to admit on books.
More than fair. What was the first book?
Oh God, I think it was Beneath the Surface by John Hargrove.
And gotcha.
I don't like John Hargrove as a person whatsoever. However, his insight that he put into that book does not compare, because I think Death of SeaWorld, I'm almost done with it.
Nice.
David Kirby has a great way of writing books because he is an author, but he wasn't a SeaWorld trainer. He didn't have that one-on-one aspect of working a SeaWorld, and that's where John Hargrove comes in. I listened to that on audiobook too, and it was so much better than reading it, because I don't know, just to hear someone's voice while and like hear the emotion that John Hargrove put into that book, so much better. So I highly recommend listening to it on Audible or like Amazon audiobooks than reading it.
Yeah, I've heard. So I was talking with Kendra on the podcast before this, and John Hargrove's Beneath the Surface came up. That's a well-renowned. I need to get it. My most recent purchase was Alexandra Morton's. Mm-hmm. I think it was. Hold up. Oh, it's hidden somewhere. I think I have it next to my bed. It's like not too late. Not on my watch. But that's more than fair. I do have to end up getting it. I think she gave the advice, get it from Thrift Books.
Yes, I would love to do more audiobooks, just because I read a book and then it just gets like tucked away somewhere, and then I'll find it a year later and I'm like, oh, I forgot I had you. But I kind of just wasted so much paper because I read you, and I'm not going to probably read you ever again. But now I'm like starting to do what you do, and I make like stacks of all my books, and they're like my decorations now.
Right. I also feel like it's nice too, because it's like when people ask like, oh, like what should I read, I can send them a picture of the stack and I'm like, take your pick. It's like I gotta write numbers next to it, be like, this is the order that I think you should read them in, if anything.
I'm not a big reader, I will say that. I only read books that have to do with orcas or killer whales. That's it. Like, I started reading a book about humpbacks, and I'm like, I'm bored, and I gave it to my friend.
It's the way it goes. It's the way it goes. I love to, there are some people who messaged and like, what's your second favorite whale? And I'm like, there isn't one. At the end of the day, as interested as I am as passionate I will be about wildlife in general, my true interest lies within one species, which is super weird, but like, there's a lot of us.
there is. It's not, it's a personality trait at this point.
Oh, it is.
I am an orca lover.
We're all the orcaholics. Yeah. That's one of my favorite words that I've been using. And anytime that I'll tell somebody that isn't in the world, they're like, that is phenomenal. That you hit it on the nose. I'm like, exactly.
There was a lot more, like, because I'll go through your TikTok comments and there's people like, oh my God, I found my people. And I'm like, I didn't even know there were this many people.
No. And that's like, back in 2014, I went to Friday Harbor for the first time. Everybody's going to be hearing the stories about this trip forever. But I was on a whale watch boat and there was this one girl on it who had the Free Willy pendant. Mm-hmm. Now, I was born in 99, right? So like, I was born after the VHSs came out with the pendant in them. So I didn't know that like the pendant existed outside of the film. Like it was something that was sold. So I'm sitting down on this whale watch boat, like little dumb 15-year-old self, looking at that being like, what? Like, you're telling me I've been watching these for like 15 years now and there's somebody else that's not only as interested, they have the fucking necklace? And it was a wild thought, and I didn't say a word that entire whale watch just because I was sitting down trying to conceptualize like, holy crap, people like this. Because it's a wild thought, because there's no like community.
It's the same with the whale watching community, because I started whale watching November of 2019.
Okay.
And I went like once or twice, and then I started going on my boss's boats, but this was before I got hired.
I see.
And that's a really funny story how I got hired, but we can talk about that after. And I started like getting to know like the people on the boat, like all the other deckhands and all the other captains. And then one of the captains invited me to a Facebook page. It's called Southern California Whale Watching. And it has like 3,000 people or something like there. And I'm like, there's more of me? Like, I'm not the only one.
It's the finding all these stuff is insane.
There's a lot, and there's probably even way more out there than we know of. Like, I find Facebook groups every single day.
Oh yeah. And one of the things that I'm really trying to wrap my head around and like more than anything else try to understand is that, especially too, I guarantee you've had people that reach out to you, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, whatever else, that are on all sides of this, like, I'll call it the knowledge spectrum of like knowing a little bit what's out there. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sitting here and I'm like, I think I know sincerely 40 to 30% of like everything that's going on and the amount of people that are out there. Like, I have a conception of like, I know about 30% of everybody that's interested in actively working. Mm-hmm. And like, not that I know names, just like the sheer amount of people. Whereas I'll post a video about Free Willy and someone would be like, oh, actually, did you know that like the whale's name is Keiko? And I'm like, yes. And I can only imagine that they would be as interested in expanding it. Mm-hmm. Just the amount of work to get to whatever places is not easy.
It's not. And I've had people in my personal life that they'll come up to me and they're like, oh, did you know this? And I'm like, oh yeah, I actually did.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's nonprofit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Excuse me. There was a lot of talk about, because people in that support captivity like to come at whale watchers and be like, well, you don't think you're stressing out whales? You don't think you're harming these animals when you're going in whale watching? And whale watching isn't perfect. There are times where the whale watching in Newport is always very, we follow the rules because we want to continue doing this. A lot of the times we will see, I have so many videos on my phone of private boaters like almost running over whales. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people understand that the whale watching companies are not the ones that are like
presenting the biggest problems.
Yeah, because a lot of whale watching boats, like, they play the same role as SeaWorld does. When someone goes and learn something about a whale, they're going to go home and have a greater appreciation, because you don't really appreciate something unless you know something about that one thing.
Of course.
And
of course,
when you were talking about the economy, there's like probably tens, if not a dozen, different whale watchings in Juneau. Mm-hmm. Juneau's coming up on their second season of no tourism, and it is heavily impacting Juneau. And I don't think people realize that, because living in California, we always have tourists. Even last summer in the middle of the pandemic, there were people on our whale watching boats.
Definitely.
But people like up in the Pacific Northwest, I assume they have a chunk of tourist season in the summer that profits a lot towards them. And to just simply just stop, if we stopped every single thing that quote unquote stressed a whale out, there would be no Friday Harbor, there'd be no whale museum, there'd be no San Juan Islands, there'd be like nothing.
It would be an entirely different world. Mm-hmm. Honestly, sincerely. I'm glad you brought up Juneau, because you're exactly right with a lot of those places as well, because they're places that people won't really think about when they're looking at this stuff, which is its own sense of insane. And then here's another thing too, and that people talk about killer whales being a staple species. It's like, killer whales are like polar bears or seals, in the sense that if you have killer whales in your water, you can guilt people into doing better for the environment. It's like, do you really want to kill Oreo, dude? Like, you trying to get the pod from Free Willy to really like have a rough go right now? And mm-hmm. you can, it's a lot easier to do that than saying they're killing coral or kelp or otherwise. So they can act as a mechanism for a betterment of just the natural environment itself and in and of itself.
I think that it also is like that because we know so much about the southern residents and about certain species that they all have names and they all have different personalities. And people are like, oh, like when they think of coral, they're like, that's coral.
Yeah.
Or like, that's kelp. Like, I don't really care about that. But when people start saying, oh my gosh, that whale named Oreo, or the whale Granny who lived to be so long, like these have names and they're so cute. And I think it makes it a lot more personable to them, because I know I don't like learning about coral or kelp, which might make me a horrible marine biology student, but it doesn't interest me.
Yeah, well, it doesn't peak. It's not the same.
And I think so many people love orcas. It's because they, out of every animal on this earth, they are probably most related, not related, but closely to humans, because they all have their own personalities and they all have their own likes and dislikes and their own names, and they all don't look the same.
Yeah. Well, this, my, I think my favorite thing personally is like, and I'll ask you, actually, first, I'll ask you first, what is your favorite thing about orcas? Like when you think about orcas, what is the one thing that you're like, oh, I really like this aspect of orcas, the community, like anything.
Mm-hmm. I would say just how freaking beautiful these animals are, and how magnificent these animals are, and just how badass they are. Nothing in the ocean will even think about challenging an orca. We have orcas that are killing sharks.
Mm-hmm.
That's badass.
No, it's absurd. And they're more powerful than, like, people will know, like, oh my god, either killer whales, or people are like, those are the demons of the sea. And you're both correct.
You are both very much correct.
100%. I think one of the things that I've been really happy with like the orca world is like, you can technically learn all of it. There's enough whales and enough organizations. Don't get me wrong, there's a ton around the world. But in comparison to, like, I don't know what I could compare it to. Like, I can know the name of every whale in captivity in 2 weeks if I really wanted to. I could know the history of all of them dating back, and who was related to who, and who was captured from where, and who captured them. Like, it's readily accessible information that is, like, easy enough to attain. And it's a story that, as broad as it is very concise in all of its workings. Like, you can follow a timeline for orcas and it all really makes sense. And it's like digestible. Like, I have what, 12 or 15 books on my thing right now. I think I'm missing 10 max for all of the major, major works that have been done on orcas, and not editions or anything like that. But in terms of the stories that have been told, like, it's so incredibly doable to dive into this realm. And I find that, like, it's I find that cooler every time that I, like, have another conversation or otherwise.
It's easier to find out where Lolita was captured, when she was captured, and who captured her, and everything that leading up to her being in Miami Sea Aquarium, than it is finding my math homework answers online.
Yes, it is. It is. And it's far more interesting than math homework answers.
It is. Like, there is a website called OrcaPod Wiki, and they have every single known captive killer whale, past and present. You can, so say I wanted to learn about Tillicum. I could look up on their website, Tillicum, and they would show, oh, this is where he was captured, and this is where he died, this is what he died of, this is how he was captured. And it's just so mind-blowing that we know that much about an animal who we still know so little about. We know so little about killer whales, because there are some species, like offshores, we know like nothing about offshore orcas.
Of course. This is what we were going back to before. Not all orcas are the same. If there's anything you should take out about this podcast, specifically this episode, not all orcas are the same. Different ecotypes, different than the rest. And if you look up orca ecotypes, you'll actually come upon a graphic from NOAA, and you'll be able to learn very quickly some of the differences. So that's also readily accessible.
Yeah. Oh, I guess we should say, like, what the three main different types of orcas are. Go for it. You have residents, who are going to be your fish eaters. They are very, very, very picky. They refuse to eat anything but fish, which is why the southern resident population is so endangered because they are like, no, we just want our fish. And if we can't get our fish, we're not going to eat anything else. Then you have the transients, which are your mammal eaters, which I think are the most interesting because you can go whale watching. Like in Monterey, I think it was yesterday. Both have a couple friends that are up in Monterey. They saw 30 orcas yesterday.
Right? 30. It's insane.
30. And so my friend was posting, there was this sea lion. It's kind of a sad picture when you think about it. But the sea lion is like trying to climb the side. I'll have to send you this picture. But it's climbing the side of the boat to try and avoid being eaten by a killer whale. And I'm like, I would pay so much money to watch that unfold because transients are so interesting and they're kind of assholes in a lot of people's eyes because you're killing baby whales and baby sea lions. But so those are your mammal eaters. So they're going to be eating whales, dolphins, your porpoises and your sea lions, etc. And then you have the offshores, which we know little to nothing about because as their name states, they live offshore and not a lot of people are offshore doing research, but those are your shark eaters. So those guys are like
top
the
dogs.
Most badass.
Top dogs.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is another thing too, though. Like those are the three main, and then you go into like different types as well, which is super interesting. You get like type C and type D who look so different than any of the orcas that you could properly imagine now, but they're the same species technically still. So
I don't even know that much about like type C or type D. The only thing I know about type D really is they have like the tiniest little eye patch and they look a little bit ridiculous. They look kind of funny.
They do look ridiculous. I'm pretty sure they have a little bit of bigger head up front too. Like it's a interesting formation, like different phenotypic variation.
Yeah.
Science terms. There we go. No, but it's masterful. It's so interesting. And I did see that picture actually. It's just so funny. I'm pretty sure it was on Erica's page. I ended up following her later. How did you become friends with that whole crowd?
Oh, okay. So I was going to answer this on your live last night, but I was like, I'll talk to him in the morning. It'll just So I know it's Dan, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The E is silent. So I know Dan because he works on a Monterey Bay whale watching boat. And yeah. I went up in November and went whale watching November of 2020.
Okay.
We just kind of started talking because I was here with this huge camera. And unless you're like deep into the realm of like wildlife photography, marine biology, et cetera, you're not going to have like a super professional setup.
Definitely.
So we started talking and I was like, oh yeah, I work down in Newport and blah, blah, blah. He was like, I know exactly who you work for. Like I've been on your guys' boat before. And then I know Erica because I work with Erica. She is another photographer on our whale watching boat.
Dope. And
I'll have to send you a couple. Like I have a coworker, Mark and Delaney. They are so amazing with photography. They went out with my boss back in November and they were like 60 miles off the coast and they came across like 12 random orcas.
Oh, sick. And
I'll have to send you them because they're all in like the whale watching orca community too.
Cool.
So.
Cool. Yeah. I just found Dan. I know you're listening to this right now as well. What's up, man? But I found Dan somehow, or I think he found me on Instagram, through Erica from Breaching Extinction.
Yes.
So it's like a little whirlwind. It's so funny too, because now like the more people that I talk to, the more one connected I'm realizing it is because it's going to be a huge web, but two, like how many people are in different places. Cause I can remember sitting down and thinking like only people that are above like 50 are actually super into this stuff and otherwise. And I went on like a dive a couple days ago into Coextinction Film, PNW Protectors, and a couple other websites just to look and be like, okay, what are people actually doing? Because I've heard of stuff, I've looked a little bit, but I haven't done my deep dive to the extent that I should yet. And so I did a surface level and it was super interesting to really see the communities itself. And especially to, what's his name? I think it's Brian from Blackfin Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a couple other people that are just around, but it's so cool to see.
And I think Colleen, the one who was on your Instagram live last night, if I remember correctly, she is the marine biologist on the boat that Dan works on.
Oh, sick. So fun.
Because I know that their marine biologist is named Colleen, but then when she said, oh, Dan showed me.
Yeah.
That then I was like, okay, they probably know each other, and that's probably how they know each other.
That's super cool. And if I'm correct, didn't they show, I think it was your Erica, Free Willy for the first time?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
What? Which that blows me away. Like, you can't go that long.
You're over here, like, worshiping Free Willy, and you're like, you're like, how have you not seen it? Honestly.
I don't even have the fourth one up. I think it's hidden.
You might kick me off of your podcast right now, but I haven't seen anything past the second one.
That's okay. There's only two after that. There's Free Willy 3, which is there. It's called The Rescue. It's pretty neat. The second one's better, in my opinion, but it's worth a watch. It's cool that you are able to watch another Free Willy for the first time. That's a cool experience. The fact that you've seen the first one, that's all that really, really matters. Like, the second and third, it's like you're deep into the Free Willy world, so to speak. But the first is like, that's always, I'm surprised if somebody gets this far within this community and no one sat them down and been like, are you fucking serious? Like, come on. Like, you haven't seen the one movie.
I remember I was flying home from somewhere. This was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I was flying home from my Orlando trip where I decided I wasn't going to support SeaWorld anymore. And they were having free movies on their flight. And I watched Free Willy twice on that flight because I finished it. And I was like, I just want to watch it again. It's just such a good movie.
Really solidify it. Do you know? Okay. So this is like one of the coolest orca history things that I know. Do you know the story of Miracle by chance?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so there's this whale named Miracle, and she was up the coast in Vancouver Island. So she was slowly but surely making her way. She went past Nanaimo to this other little bay, and there was a dude that went out and like fed her fish every day. She was heavily infected and things like that. This was in like 1972, so like way back.
Story?
Hmm?
Is it a true story?
It's a true story, yeah. Killer Whale, The Saga of Miracle by Paul Jeun. I can send you a picture of that. I just finished the book. Super, super cool. But basically, they call up a bunch of people, and Bob Wright from Sealand of the Pacific, or one of the aquariums down in Victoria, was like, okay, let's try to rehabilitate and save this whale. So they get a bunch of people and like set it up so that they can lift the whale, put it into a truck, and then drive it down. Now, they drive it down and they put it into a hotel pool. And this is actually the whale that I keep on talking about that was airlifted by helicopter, which I think is just the craziest thing in the world. But one of the like neatest parts of that story is, you know, the scene when they're like driving the whale to the area where it leaves, right? When they're driving. Yeah. In Free Willy, when they're driving Willy with like the trailer in the back.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972, there was a dude with a truck with a whale attached to its bed driving down the island for 7 hours to go to this hotel pool so that they could help save this whale. And I think the fact that somebody's actually driven with a whale attached to their truck bed, I think was the funniest thing that I learned.
Oh my gosh, you reminded me of a story when you said truck. So there was this guy who drove around a dead sperm whale in this refrigerated, I swear to God, Fred, I will have to send you this. He made like, I wish I remembered what it was called, but I saw it like a couple days ago and I like quickly read it and then
had to go
back. But he drove around in this huge like refrigerated tank on a truck, a dead sperm whale. And I think he had like a couple other animals. But yeah, when you said whale in a truck, I was like, I have to tell Fred. It's not North, but
do you know where he was going?
I think he literally wanted to do like a tour of America with this dead sperm whale in his truck.
That's terrifying.
I know.
Yo, serial killers are dangerous and scary. I don't want to talk to that guy. Is there anybody that I wouldn't want to stumble upon? It's the man with a sperm whale in his truck. Are you kidding me?
Dude, I'll send you the link. It's quite the read.
Oh, I can imagine. I'll link it below in this thing as well, which is insane. For those of you, I'm sorry for anybody listening to this on audio, if you are not come to the thing, but that's the picture inside the book. that they have. It's just, I wanted to share because I saw the picture too, and I was like, wow, that's a somebody actually fucking did that.
It's, oh, and if you don't listen or watch the YouTube, that sucks because Fred got to have his hair wrapped up at the beginning and it was quite funny.
Oh, yes. I had my hair in a plop earlier. I just got out of the shower before I did this. I woke up late today. So, yeah. And I took it out about halfway. So, some of you have been enjoying the luscious locks, but you did miss the plop. You can go on and look for like 5 seconds if you really want a good laugh.
Yeah. But there's your incentive. There's some cool things that happen when you watch a video.
Definitely, definitely. And I don't know, well, I've already probably done this by now, but be on the lookout. I might be doing subscriber giveaways. I know for my first 100, the first 100 people that subscribed, which is going to be hopefully way before this episode 6 now, I'm giving away an orca adoption kit from the Whale Museum.
I wanted to steal your idea when I hit 2,000.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I think I'm going to steal it and have some, like, the winner have a whale adopted in their name. I'm gonna
right. I think it's super cool. It's super nice. And the person, like, I think it sincerely would be a good experience for them to have as well. And supporting, there's so much good that comes out of it that it's just worth it.
I'm waiting for my package from the Whale Museum to come.
You have another one?
With my orca adoption paperwork. And it says it was delivered, but it wasn't. Cool. It was not delivered yet.
How dare they? How dare they? If you want to see the what's called your most recent haul, I know that you put it up on TikTok, Instagram. Yeah something like that.
Yeah, TikTok.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I think it was because I ordered a sticker and then I was like, wait, no, I want to adopt an orca. So I have two separate ones coming in. And so another whale mail haul coming to the TikTok near you.
Love that whale mail. The amount of puns and rhymes that have been coming out in the past couple of days, it's been insane. I know for the first podcast and the rest of my stuff, I have welcome to the podcast, like WHALE. And I'm like, wow, we're starting to get deep, deep into the dad jokes of whale communities. Yeah.
Like I said, it's not a hobby. It's a personality trait.
Definitely. Definitely. All right, we're inching up on like an hour something, so I feel like this is a really good point to kind of wrap it up. And especially too, I see a lot more conversations. I would say I'm doing this podcast for a great while, so I'm excited to have you on going forward as well.
I'm always happy to. I'll be maybe at home in California, but I will still be happy to.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. You want to plug your socials? Just give it to anybody who'd be around.
Yeah, so a lot of my stuff is just Michaela Manschult. So then that's my Instagram. If you want to follow my personal life, I think I'm a pretty interesting person. then I have my wildlife photography account, which if you find my personal, it's linked in my bio, but that's Cetacean Nation, but with one N. And then TikTok is Michaela Manschult. YouTube is Michaela Manschult. But yeah, I don't think I'm on anything else. Instagram. I'm on Twitter, but it's M_Manschult. I've slowly converted that into my marine biology Twitter instead of like my personal Twitter. So there's some stuff on there too if you want to go check that out as well.
Super nice. And for those of you watching on YouTube, this will be all linked in the bio as well. So you can just go down, click it, and go straight from there. So that's going to be super good. And as you know, I'm the Orca Man. So if you haven't found me, well, you have now. So thank you so much, guys, for listening. Thank you again, Michaela, for having us sitting down, talking with me for this hour and a half. This has been one of my favorite conversations so far. So that's been a blast. And I hope the rest.
I want to thank Michaela again for coming on. Our conversation was really wonderful. And to be honest, this hour that you've heard today is actually only a portion. The actual podcast in its entirety is around an hour and 20 minutes. And you can find it on your favorite streaming platforms with regard to audio, as well as YouTube if you'd like to see the both of us just communicating back and forth for the whole time. So be sure to check those out. You can also find me, The Orca Man, as at The Orca Man on every platform, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Twitter, I believe I'm ID Reimagined, but if you look up Orca Man, I should still be there, so that's not a problem. A big shout out to Michaela one last time. Once again, I'm The Orca Man, and I hope you all have a wonderful
day. Listen, radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit. In terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people.
including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
The incredible, squishable, squashable, squeezable.